as we head toward the presidential election this November, the Republican frontrunner Mitt Romney is a man whose estimated net worth is $250 million. Romney claims to be a self-made man, despite his privileged upbringing and the fact that he made most of his money through financial investments, which are taxed at a lower rate than regularly earned income. Now, authors Brian Miller and Mike Lapham, in their book titled The Self-Made Myth, examine the fantasy that a person who merely works hard can achieve the American dream. The self-made myth has its origins in early America, which was intent on setting itself apart from the pedigreed aristocracies of Europe, which offered little hope for individual success. Horatio Alger's stories of the individual's rise from rags to riches struck a deep chord in the American psyche. But as Miller and Lapham point out in their new book, businesses and individuals cannot succeed without certain infrastructure in place, like a public education system, public transportation, the U.S. Postal Service, and other laws and regulations. When one acknowledges all the ways in which entrepreneurs benefit from these pre-existing systems, taxes are seen more clearly as a way to financially support the structures which help these individuals create their wealth in the first place. Instead of the self-made man, there is actually a built-together community which helps us by debunking the idea of the self-made man. Miller and Lapham show us that there's no level playing field, and ideas about the self-made man are at the heart of how we shape our public policy decisions. With interviews from Warren Buffett, Disney heir Abigail Disney, Ben Cohen of Ben & Jerry's, among others, Miller and Lapham show how these successful business people benefited from governmental programs. My guest is Brian Miller, Executive Director of United for a Fair Economy and co-author of The Self-Made Myth. Welcome to Uprising, Brian.
Thank you, Sonali. Glad to be on the show.
Well, the Horatio Alger story is an age-old American story, and Ayn Rand's philosophy is perhaps a more modern and more extreme version of this myth. And yet these are sort of these sorts of stories are from America's past. How strong is the idea currently that government gets in the way of individual success and business success in today's discourse? I suppose the Republican debates are indication enough of how strong it is.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, there's this self-made myth, which again, as you mentioned in the introduction, goes all the way back to our nation's founding, Horatio Alger, and particularly in the 1950s, Ayn Rand, who lifted it up to new heights. Mm-hmm. And if you look at conservative politicians and talk radio, they're echoing these themes time and again. Every time you hear them describe a progressive tax as punishing success, the assertion here is that it's their success. They built this success by themselves. When you hear people say it's their money, they earned it, they should be able to keep it, again, the assertion is that they made it by themselves without any help from others. And this denial, this consistent denial of the role that society plays, not to mention the role that privilege and various head starts plays, is used to fuel an anti-government narrative and justify extreme inequality in this country.
So according to your book, there's two ways of looking at it. One is the self-made man, which is a conservative viewpoint. The other is the sort of built-together community, which is a more liberal perspective on it. How do you break down the fact that the self-made man is a myth? And how does income inequality, for example, get justified by this myth of the self-made man?
Sure. Well, I'll start with the income inequality and go back. You know, when we look at extreme inequality, and, you know, Occupy and a lot of folks have done an outstanding job of raising visibility about the levels of inequality we are as a nation. But as long as those on the right can fire back, oh, that it doesn't matter because they earned it, that somehow those at the top are at the top because they worked harder, they were smarter, they made more sacrifices than everyone else, then all of a sudden any effort to rein in inequality is viewed as punishing success. And so going at and dismantling this self-made myth and showing that, no, their success was built by a host of factors, including government supports, but also including privilege, head starts in life, then all of a sudden there's a lot more ground and moral justification for reining in extreme inequality. So, you know, these really are closely related. And, you know, when we go at taking apart the self-made myth in the book, you know, we start by looking at, where it doesn't match, you know. And we interviewed, as you mentioned, 14 business leaders who are profiled in the book. And all of these business folks, they worked hard, they had great ideas, but most of the time they were also really lucky. historical timing worked in their favor, many of whom had starts in life. They were born to wealth, or at least all the profilees in the book were at least born to middle-class households. And then once they did succeed, there was this vast array of publicly supported investments, roads, transportation systems, courts, that magnified their success many, many times over.
The New York Times had an interesting article in mid-February called "Even Critics of Safety Net Increasingly Depend on It," where they profile a person who is an active member of the Tea Party, who supports people like Mitt Romney and the conservative self-made man myth, but also draws on the government safety net. And the New York Times's justification for it is they say people like this person want to reduce the role of government in their lives. They're frustrated that they need help, feel guilty for taking it, and resent the government for providing it. They say they want less help for themselves, less help in caring for relatives, and less assistance when they reach old age. Do you agree with this analysis for the reasons why, and as you point out in your book, there's actually this deep resentment even among some middle-class Americans?
I guess it depends on who you talk to. Mm-hmm. And there are some who probably resent this, and probably because they've bought into the self-made myth notion. But, I think most folks, when you go out and you talk to them, there's one piece in the book where we call Making the Invisible Invisible, or Making the Invisible Visible, where there was a study done that asked people whether they'd ever personally received a government assistance. And the vast majority of people say no. And then they go and start asking them very specific questions. Did you ever get a Pell Grant? Did you ever get a home mortgage deduction? Did you ever take Social Security? And all of a sudden, what happened was the vast majority of people who said they'd never taken a government program had. And there's this blindness that we all have to the role that government plays in our everyday lives. You know, from the point when we get up in the morning and wake up in a safe neighborhood, drive, and there's safe streets to get to our work on. There's a blindness and a denial of that, and what we really lift up in this book is saying, we need to really take those blinders off and see the society around us and see the role that government plays in all of our lives, and really put this anti-government narrative and this anti-government story to rest, because it's continuing to embrace it is continuing to go down this anti-government road is leading to policies that are counterproductive to the kind of prosperity we need to be creating in this nation.
Brian Miller, so a counterpoint to the self-made myth is the built-together reality. What exactly do you mean by built-together reality? How does the sort of web of infrastructure that's paid for by the government through taxes help entrepreneurs, businesses, et cetera, succeed?
Yeah, I think, again, there's a lot of factors. When we say built together reality, the entrepreneur plays a role in building that success, no doubt. Again, all the people we profile have great ideas. They work hard. They make sacrifice. But their success was also built by all of us when we pay our taxes, when we create a transportation infrastructure and so forth. Some of the profilees that we talked to in the book, Kim Jordan, CEO of New Belgium Brewing, has this great quote about beer is heavy. And if it weren't for the transportation systems, we wouldn't be able to get our product to market. Nikhil Arora, co-founder of a company called Back to the Roots, whose product is in 500 stores across the country, his whole business was founded by mini grants from UC Berkeley for young entrepreneurs, and he's gotten a few other grants along the way. He's benefited from the stimulus package. There was a Jobs Now program that was part of the Recovery Act, and he has this great quote at the end of his profile where he talks about, that quote about it takes a village to raise a child. Well, I believe it takes a village to raise a business. And so the business leaders we talk to really acknowledge that role, and they talk about it in very concrete terms in the book.
And yet the CEOs of companies making obscene salaries, you point out in your book, often attribute their or justify their salaries, saying that they and they alone created these enormous amounts of wealth. And this goes back to the Ayn Rand philosophy that business leaders are the titans of industry and all wealth flows from them and not only should government get out of the way, but government can't do as well the things that they do in creating wealth.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's some great quotes in there from the CEOs when they talk about, I created X billion dollars or in shareholder wealth. And in all cases, they really hinge on this word I. There's no acknowledgement of the work that all the thousands of employees in the company did, the managers, or society as a whole. It's I created all this shareholder wealth, and therefore it's used as justification for really outlandish salaries for CEOs. And yes, that this is how it ties in. Again, the self-made myth, this notion that all wealth derives from these titans of industry, is used to rationalize everything from extreme inequality, extravagant CEO pay, and assaults on the role of government. Mm-hmm. And so we really flip that narrative in the book and do our best to tell a more honest story.
Well, finally, Brian Miller, given the ignorance even among many Americans about how we all rely on the government to provide us with services that we use, what needs to happen to change the narrative aside from public education? Because we're at a time today when this myth is so pervasive, particularly among the political elites who do have power, that government services are seen as, are horribly demonized, and people who rely on them are likely going to lose out.
Well, I think we need to start telling an honest story. And so we have a website, selfmademyth.org, where there's a place where business leaders are telling the story about how their success was possible by how government played a role in helping their business succeed. And, you know, we're calling on folks to, you know, when you see an op-ed or when you see a bad article in the newspaper, write an op-ed, write a letter to the editor. We need to challenge this self-made myth story every time we hear it and move towards a more honest understanding of business success. We also have a project called Responsible Wealth that we're getting a lot of these business leaders organized into and really leading out there in precedents calling for progressive tax policies. Because, again, once you understand that the origin of their success is in large part because of these publicly funded investments, then suddenly progressive taxes, millionaires' taxes, are no longer about punishing success. They're now about a responsibility to pay it forward to the society that made their success possible.
Hmm. One of the people you interview in your book calls taxes the price of doing business, simply that. Well, Brian Miller, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. Give out that website one more time.
Selfmademyth.org.
And we link to that from our website, uprisingradio.org, later today. Thanks so much, Brian.
Thank you, Sonali.
Brian Miller is Executive Director of United for a Fair Economy. He is the co-author with Michael Lapham of the book The Self-Made Myth and the Truth About How Government Helps Individuals and Businesses Succeed. It has forewords by Bill Gates Sr. and Chuck Collins. For Sonali's subversive thought for the day, A. Philip Randolph once said, "A community is democratic only when the humblest and weakest person can enjoy the highest civil, economic, and social rights that the biggest and most powerful possess." That's A. Philip Randolph. That's Sonali's subversive thought for the day.